powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, big news yesterday. Seahawks, this via the Seattle Times, are parting ways with defensive coordinator Ken Norton Jr., also parting ways with defensive passing game coordinator Andre Curtis. Now, the defense and specifically passing defense have really struggled, particularly the last two seasons, though. The last couple years has been kind of a downward slope from when this team was at its very best. So, Jake, you've got some particular stats, but I wanted to start by identifying some of the issues, because if we have a broader conversation about, hey, does getting a new defensive coordinator solve the Seahawks' problems? Well, the first part of that is actually identifying the Seahawks' problems. So in terms of just basics, absolute basics, the Seahawks allowed 379 yards per game in 2021. That was 28th. By the way, they allowed 380 in 2020. The passing defense ranked 31st out of 32 for 2 years in a row. So they've clearly struggled with yards surrendered. They were better with sacks last year than they were this year, better with scoring this year than they were last year. But overall, they haven't really been consistent across really any category. And if anything, don't have one area of the defense where they especially excel. The closest they've come to it is this year, the run defense.
Stacey, you look under the hood, you know, with this team. I mean, you know, one of the more important aspects of a defense is getting and generating pressure and getting takeaways. And this is something that they struggled with. And Stacey, this is, bear in mind, this is with the huge surge that you saw in the last month, in the last couple weeks in particular, from this defense. Sack percentage, 4.9%. That's fourth worst in the league. 11th fewest sacks. Pressure percentage, 22.2, which was seventh worst. And just 18 takeaways, which was the eighth fewest. Those are numbers that you can't have on a consistent basis. And guess what? Last year, in the second half, their sack totals and percentages went shot straight up. But still, they were, when it was all said and done towards the end of the year, they were average in a lot of these categories other than sack totals itself. So this is something that when you talk about identifying problems, turnovers, lack thereof, lack of pressure on the quarterback, generating sacks, those are things that you can't have, you can't consistently be bad at and expect to be a good defense.
Yeah, and when you're looking at kind of who's responsible for what, I think that's where my interest has peaked the most. We talked with Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times, who was one of the reporters behind this story yesterday evening, and I said, hey, where does the line differentiate between the control Pete Carroll has and what Ken Norton Jr. has, right? Like, meaning, does getting Ken Norton Jr., moving on from him and getting someone else, solve your problems? Or, you know, is this Pete Carroll's defense that Pete Carroll needs to figure out and needs to try to find a way to fix? And Bob said, look, Pete Carroll has a lot of influence. Like, when you want to talk about the hand that Pete Carroll has in the defense, it's a pretty sizable one. Like, it is a pretty there's quite a lot of control that he has over it. So how does Pete Carroll then? I feel like that's almost how I should phrase the question. Like, how does Pete Carroll fix the defense? Because no matter who he brings in, the two that have been linked to this job the most, one comes from within the program, Clint Hurt, who's excelled with the defensive line. Puna Ford and Al Woods had wonderful seasons for Seattle, but still from within the program and currently an assistant head coach. And then the other is Ed Donatell, a defensive coordinator with the Broncos, who goes back years with Pete Carroll and who knows Pete Carroll very well. So assuming that either of these guys are hired, it's still a Pete Carroll defense. This is not a Vic Fangio former head coach that's coming in to say, this is how I want to do things. This is Pete Carroll's defense. So how does Pete Carroll fix it?
Well, the best thing that Pete Carroll can do is try and get the best minds that he can in the building. And so, look, I think going after a Vic Fangio, or let's say Brian Flores or Dan Quinn never got a head coaching job and they're not in line for one and those guys are available and out there, that to me is not a good mix. Because Pete Carroll is not going to relinquish control of the defense. And if you're Pete Carroll at this stage of his career, why should you? It's something that I would say, hey, at this stage, I would love to see Pete Carroll be head coach and you know, be more of a delegator than anything else, in terms of the offense and defense and focus on culture building, focus on, you know, those aspects of it. But that's not what Pete's going to do. Pete is going to be very involved on the defensive side of it. So how do you get the best minds in the building? Well, if you feel really good about Clint Hurt and what he's been able to do with the defensive line, and you feel like he is a rising star in this industry, you feel like the guys in the locker room, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, respond to him well, okay, well then I'll promote Clint Hurt, and maybe I still add Ed Donatell from the outside. Maybe, Stacy, you have a co-defensive coordinator situation like you had on the offensive side of the ball to start this thing out with Daryl Bevel and Tom Cable, right? At one point, they were pass game coordinator and run game coordinator. Co-OCs, and maybe you see something like that with Clint Hurt and Ed Donatell. Ed Donatell is a secondary coach. That's where he is, you know, cut his teeth in the NFL, very similar to Pete Carroll, and then has been with Vic Fangio for, you know, over a decade now, following him from San Francisco to Chicago, then to Denver. So you look at that part of it. That is bringing somebody else in that has a different view, a different take on, you know, defensive play, yet you're familiar with who they are. And that is something that I think is probably a very likely outcome to maybe this coaching search when it comes to finding the next defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I guess when you look back at like 2013 in 2014, a bit of 2015, when the defense is at its very best, it's easy to say like, oh, go out and get, I don't know, go out and get Cam Chancellor again. Go out and get Richard Sherman again. Like, personnel is certainly part of it, right? Like, there's only so much that Pete Carroll or the new defensive coordinator can do with exactly the personnel that they have. They aren't going to be able to go out and get. I mean, I was looking yesterday at like a pass rush win percentage and run blocking win percentage and all kinds of different stuff on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And the very best team with the pass rush should surprise no one. It's the L.A. Rams. As a team, they were great with the pass rush win percentage, meaning that they were able, if you're really good at that, you get the win if you beat your block in 2.5 seconds or less. Likewise, an offensive lineman gets a win if he holds you off for 2.5 seconds or more. So the Rams did that better than any other team, and among the top performers, should surprise absolutely no one. At defensive tackle, the very best is Aaron Donald. Seattle can't go out. You can look at the Rams and say, we have to be able to excel in that area because that's been their formula. How do you go out and get Aaron Donald? Literally no one has been able to do that in the years since he's been drafted, and he may very well go down in NFL history as the best defensive tackle ever. So, like, I don't know if you can go out and find that personnel this year, but then what else changed, right? It can't just be that the players are different, and that's what got you from being the top-scoring defense to allowing more passing yards than any other team but one over the last two seasons. Like, it can't just be players.
Right. Well, it can't, and that is why I believe that when you're talking about the defense overall, I think that you have to point to, you know, some of the good that they have done and have to look at some of the weak points. And right, that's ultimately what we're doing, Stacey, is we're looking at the weak points and saying, what's going to change? What's going to improve moving forward? Because here is an opportunity to do that. Moving on from Ken Norton Jr. is a very difficult thing to do, knowing the history of who Ken Norton is to Pete Carroll, who he has been to somebody like Bobby Wagner, right? The commanding presence that Ken Norton Jr. has had in that building for a very, very long time. And so now this is an opportunity to find a new voice, a new leader that can carry on that message that Pete Carroll ultimately wants, but can put their own spin on things and can try to maximize the potential that is on this roster. And Stacey, you talk about finding Aaron Donalds. You talk about finding, you know, the next, you know, blue chip talent. Yes, that is true. But you also have guys like Daryl Taylor, Jordan Brooks, Jamal Adams that, you know, Jamal Adams, don't forget about Jamal Adams, to where you have to get the absolute best out of them and have to find a way schematically to be able to do that. And that's what the next person in line to take over this job has to find in order to, you know, propel this thing forward and to get them from being a bottom half defense to being a top half defense that really can hold their own against some of the league's best offenses.
Yeah, they clearly need to get better, at least with pass rush. So obviously we'll see if, you know, if they go in and get a huge difference maker in free agency or perhaps draft someone that can really make a difference in the second round or whenever they're going to, you know, whenever in the second round they're going to get in there, then maybe that solves some of your problems, right? Like maybe that does help. But I don't want anyone to mistake pointing at a problem as saying there needs to be change. It's saying there needs to be change to fix a problem, right? Like I want to make that very clear. Like this isn't a get rid of Pete and you'll solve the problem. This is, hey, how can you get back to the formula you had when it worked so well? Like, what's missing?
I don't know. I don't know why that. I don't know why, you know, having these kind of discussions always come to, you know, maybe it's just the landscape of everything.
I think
the
it's absolutely the landscape. It's like a weird defensive one.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be defensive. We can absolutely address these issues and say, okay, what are the issues and how do we move forward and how do we talk through what we know versus what we think is going to change or what's not going to change. So that to me is something that I don't think Pete's going to change in terms of, you know, how much of a hand he's going to want to have in the defense. And so now you have to find the right person that's going to give enough of a differentiating factor or a different, you know, look or angle to your defense that is going to hit the right chord with this group and is going to be the right thing to do with the personnel that you currently have. And they need to change from, adjusting and making the adjustments in the second half and getting right in the second half to being able to be a great defense from start to finish. And that to me is going to take a great deal of leadership, a great deal of conviction. And that's why, you know, again, you know, Vic Fangio would never happen. But somebody like Gus Bradley, to me, Stacey, if he did become available as a defensive coordinator perspective, that's somebody that I would be very, very, very intrigued to see come back and would love to see come back here to Seattle.
All right. Don't forget, you can watch the show live on 710sports.com/video. Also, who were the top Seattle athletes of 2021? Help the Seattle Sports Commission choose the sports stars and stories of the year by voting for the 87th annual Sports Star of the Year Awards. You can find more info about voting or the May event itself at 710sports.com/events. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Ken Norton Jr. has been let go as defensive coordinator for the Seahawks, reportedly, according to the Seattle Times. Was it time to move on?
Yes, it absolutely was time to move on. And I want to play cut number one here. This is our own Dave Wyman talking about, you know, Ken Norton's defensive averages since he has been here in Seattle and as a DC overall.
You know, I even ranked him by season, you know, of where his average ranking was for 15, 16, 17. It all comes out to about the same. It's, you know, whether you say as a Seahawk coordinator or as a Raider coordinator or putting those two together, it's about 19. That's about the average rank for those six categories, which again are total yards, pass, run, points, sacks, and takeaways.
So when you talk about that, that just is not good enough. And over the last couple years, the last 4 years with the Seahawks defense, they have not been good enough in terms of being able to consistently get themselves off the field, being able to consistently generate turnovers, consistently generating sacks. They've had spurts, they've had flashes, they've had moments, but they've never, ever been able to truly put it all together and actually build and progress forward towards something. And that has to change with this defense. You want to be able to have a clear identity with this group that you know, Stacey, going year in and year out, this is what I can expect from the Seattle Seahawks defense. And that, to me, has been a major problem for this group over the last 4 years, that they've just been kind of searching and trying to find answers rather than having the answer with this group. And that, to me, is a big reason why you're moving on from Ken Norton Jr. As of this week.
Second down. Who then should the Seahawks go after to be their next defensive coordinator?
Well, I certainly have my list of guys. Now, I want to mention the guys that the Seattle Times has reported, has immediately linked to the job, because I think it's very, very important and also very likely that those two names could be names that you do see eventually take over the job, and that is current defensive line coach Clint Hurt, and someone from the outside, but someone that Pete knows and has coached with, you know, way back in the day, is Ed Donatell. And Ed Donatell is a Vic Fangio recent disciple. He has coached with Fangio, under Fangio, since 2011, is starting with those great defenses in San Francisco, and then following him to Chicago and Denver as well, eventually taking over as the defensive coordinator there in Denver for the last three seasons. So those are the two names that immediately have come up. Other names that I would like to insert into that list, Vic Fangio, just because I would love to see it happen. I don't believe that's a name that's actually going to happen, but Gus Bradley would be the other name that stands out to me as a clear no-brainer if he was to be let go by the Raiders in their, you know, search for a new coach. That ends up happening. Gus Bradley, to me, would be a perfect fit here. I think a pretty seamless transition, knowing who he is, knowing what he's about, and knowing that he has been able to produce some great defenses over the years.
Third down. All right, sticking in the defensive coordinator arena for one final question. What should be the three main priorities for the new defensive coordinator once he assumes that role?
To me, it is super, super clear what the three priorities should be in order to fix this defense. Number one, you have to be better in sacks. You have to be better in terms of generating sacks, generating consistent pressure. Their numbers in terms of pressure percentage, sack numbers, sack rate are just all below what they should be, and that has to change. So that's number one. Number two, turnovers. This has been a group that has been known to be very optimistic. When this defense has been at its best, it's because they have lived up to the mantra of Pete Carroll when he talks about it's all about the ball. All about the ball defensively, going after the ball, punching, ripping the ball out, getting interceptions, getting the ball back to your offense. They have to be more opportunistic with turnovers. And lastly, you gave up two first-round picks. You paid this man $17.5 million. You made him the highest-paid safety. The third and most important priority is making sure that Jamal Adams becomes an absolute superstar in this defense and that his production is at an all-time high. You don't give up that level of capital, draft capital and investment, and not make sure that Jamal Adams is one of the best safeties in all of football, one of the best defensive players in all of football, and they have to find a way to unlock his ability, because it's there and we've seen it and witnessed it. And unfortunately, this year was more of a step back in terms of that production. They've got to find a way to get him back to producing at a high level.
Fourth down. Back to the wild card for this one. What impressed you most about the Rams' dominant win over the Cardinals last night?
What impressed me the most was the fact that, look, the conversation, what were we talking about yesterday? What's Matthew Stafford going to play like? Is he going to play turnover free? Right? Is he going to, with this high, you know, power passing offense, is he going to be able to carry that load in a playoff game? Well, he gets his first playoff win. How? Well, not passing the ball over 30 times, 40 times like he's done for the majority of the regular season. He passed it 17 times. Why? Because the Rams got after it in the ground game. 38 carries, 140 yards on the ground. Sony Michel and Cam Akers split the load between the two of them and had fantastic nights, and that allowed Matthew Stafford to have a lot of pressure taken off of him in this game. And so I think that is overall what really impressed me. And if the Rams can play more to that style, I think they've got a legitimate chance to win next weekend against Tampa Bay. They will make a game out of it, no question about it.
All right, don't forget, you can watch the show live on 710sports.com/video. Now, coming up in the timeline, we've got some good stuff. The Kraken have a new addition that I think is going to very quickly become a fan favorite, if not a fan favorite already. You've got Cliff Kingsbury, that's hard to say. His teams have gone on a late season slide every year since he's been head coach. And if you think that sounds bad on its face, just wait. just wait until we read you these stats. In fact, was this what, Jake, you said that Brooke saw this and was thinking, like, wait, how has this guy continued to get a head coach?
Yeah, she could not believe what she saw when I showed her this record.
Absolutely insane. Also, a really, really heartwarming moment from Wazoo football. Caught on video the other day. Really, really cool. And Jake, you also have a close connection to this story as well. So looking forward to tapping into that and all kinds of good stuff coming up in the timeline. As a reminder, you guys, we're going to be taking your calls coming up at noon. I'll give you the number to call. I'll give you the question. We'll open up phone lines. If you want to call in, you can. We'll see if anyone out there wants to chime in about any of this, looking at the latest Seahawks news. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see if you guys want to have a conversation about that. It's all coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey this hour, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. So let's dive right in. The Kraken, if you were seeing this story trending, they've added the newest member of their team. It's a team dog. His name is Davy Jones. He's adorable. He's tiny. It's very exciting. The video is on the Kraken Instagram account if you want to see kind of the full thing that happened. But a quick summary of it, they're asking players as they're leaving the ice after, I'm assuming, like just a warm-ups, a skate around, they're leaving the ice and they ask players, hey, would you want a team dog? And all the players are like, yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah.
Except for one player.
I believe it was Mark Giordano who said,
says team cat.
He wants a cat. He would be a cat guy.
Yeah. What are you doing, Mark?
Can you have that person as your captain?
Absolutely not. Absolutely. That was actually the point of that video and the point of the team dog, is to see which player says, no, get a team cat, and trade or cut him immediately. So you have everyone except for Mark Giordano right on board with it because they're cool, understand the importance of a team dog, and then moments later, they actually introduce the team dog, which they've had all along, and they brought it in to surprise the guys. It's very cute. And hear me out, Jake and Curtis, I think we need to get a 710 ESPN Seattle station dog.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. So who's going to take care of the dog?
That's the first question.
Kyle.
Kyle already has a dog at home.
Well, he can get another dog here for the station, though.
But who's going to stay at the station 24 hours a day with it?
I mean, I will hang out with the dog. I can take the dog home with me. Do I have to walk it?
Well, yeah, it's a dog.
Yes, Stacey.
It's not a house plant.
You have to take care of it. It's not a goldfish.
It's a living, breathing animal.
We could take turns. I mean, you can take the dog home. Jake can take the dog home. Mike Salt can take the dog home.
Stacey's one of those dog people that she likes dogs but doesn't want to have to, like, own one
to
put in the effort.
Yeah, welcome to every other person on the planet.
Yeah.
Everyone likes dogs. Not everyone wants to take care of. It's like kids. Everyone can love it. Kids are cute. When they're not crying, like, they're fine. They're adorable. Except for, like, maybe I don't want to take care of one all the time. You know?
Comparing dogs to kids is not an accurate comparison. I'll tell you that right now. And anyone out there who tries to make that comparison, like, oh, or where it's like, oh, you guys should have kids. Well, I've already got a dog, and it's like, it's not the same.
All right.
Is nowhere near the same.
Well, anyway, I'm going to go ahead and scrap my idea of a station dog unless Kyle Brown is going to take care of it.
Look, if somebody wants to step up and take care of a dog 24 hours a day.
Will I pet it? Yes.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Stacey's going to try to pawn it off to Mike Lefko. You watch. And Mike is such a nice guy that he's going to be like, I can't say no.
Okay.
I will not allow you to do that to him. No way.
Moving on, next story here. Cliff Kingsbury's teams have gone on late season slides every year he's been head coach. Don't believe me? We'll take this tweet, speaking of the timeline, from the Action Network, at Action Network HQ. It looks at Cliff's end to the season as head coach through Texas Tech to the Cardinals. Okay, I'm just going to read them in order. In 2013, lost 5 of 6. 2014, lost 4 of 6. 2015, lost 4 of 6. 2016, lost 6 of 8. 2017, lost 6 of 8. 2018, lost 5 of 5. Good thing that stopped with Arizona. Just kidding, it didn't. 2019, lost 7 of 9. 2020, lost 5 of 7. 2021, lost 5 of 6. Jake, what the heck goes into this kind of slide for a coach? Is this just us making up a narrative about Cliff, or is this something that actually goes into it? And if it actually is Cliff, if Cliff is the common denominator, what makes for an end-of-season slide? Is it injuries? Is it, like, not getting the right guys on the field? I mean, what would make someone not able to finish out a season strong?
Stacey, the numbers don't lie. I mean, this is a stat that is just beyond me, right? You talk about trends, Stacey. You were all last week, you were talking about trends. Well, this is a pretty bad trend that you're looking at here with Cliff Kingsbury. And what it says to me is, as a head coach, when you don't have strong culture, when you don't have that ability to get guys to dig deep when it matters at its most, or also coaching at your best when it matters most, this is the result that you get. So yeah, you could blame injuries, you could go point to a number of different factors, but ultimately the common denominator is the head coach. And that to me is something you cannot overlook. So when you have this sort of trend, when things start to get harder as the season ends and you start to progress, and things become more pressure packed, you need to be at your best as a coach. You need to be coaching your team to be at its best in those moments and at that time. And Cliff Kingsbury has fallen short of that through his entire head coaching tenure, whether that's at Texas Tech or with the Arizona Cardinals. And that's a trend that I don't think that you can continue to keep signing up for if you're the Arizona Cardinals. I don't know what your next move would be. It certainly would not be an easy transition, but I don't know how you really legitimately look at Arizona as a team that can get to a Super Bowl, can capitalize on the talent of Kyler Murray, when you have this trend that is just staring you right in the face.
Next story here, this one has to do with Wazoo football, where a heartwarming moment Monday, head coach Jake Dickert rewarded walk-on Lincoln Victor with a scholarship. Before I play this sound, Jake, you actually know Lincoln Victor. Do you want to tell us a bit about him before I play this?
Sure. I mean, Lincoln Victor, he's a local guy. He played at high school at Union High School, in high school was their quarterback, and eventually transitioned into becoming a receiver.
All right, so here we go. Without further ado, Jake Dickert, in the middle of a meeting, announces this scholarship for Lincoln.
And when I think about earning it every day, okay, there's a person here that I have seen, okay, over the last year, stack days, stack moments, stack opportunities. Okay, bring more life to this team, okay, than a lot of people. Okay, and he believes in himself, he believes in you, he believes in us. And I'm excited that he earned it. Lincoln Victor earned a scholarship!
I have to tell you guys, I love these stories so much. The ones where someone is like a walk-on and then they get announced as as getting a scholarship in the middle of a meeting and everyone freaks out because everyone else knows about it. I am a sucker for those stories.
Well, and Lincoln Victor, he's somebody that I had the privilege to coach as he was in high school. And look, everyone knew that he was going to be a receiver. He's 5'9". Okay, he's 5'9". Maybe Lincoln would try to convince you he's 5'10".
Hey,
but he's a small guy. He's not going to play quarterback at the next level. Yet he wanted to train as a quarterback to just be the best high school quarterback that he possibly could be. I mean, super electric, all of it. And he ended up getting a scholarship to Hawaii with Nick Rolovich. Rolo comes over to WSU. He transfers, walks on to WSU, and now eventually earns himself a scholarship here with Jake Dicker. And, you know, just an incredible, kid, incredible hard worker. And, you know, these are the types of stories that you love to see. You love to see these kids be rewarded. And, you know, good on Jake Dickert for recognizing that and giving Lincoln Victor a scholarship, who is a contributor and a starter for this team now. And also the other thing that I would say is that it does endear you to, you know, local recruits here, knowing that Lincoln Victor is, you know, a hometown kid.
By the way, speaking of, you mentioned earlier that Kalen DeBoer, you know, you were waiting to hear whether or not he'd hit the local recruiting trail. Have you heard an update on that?
No, not particularly. I mean, I would say that neither one of them have been burning up the local recruiting trail. But hopefully that's something that will change in the near future. I'm holding out optimism, and I think there's a ton of talent that's here in Washington. And I would love to see that talent have a great deal of pride back in these universities again, in Washington and Washington State. But that's not going to happen until these two universities put forth serious effort into making that happen.
Weird question. Is any of that related to COVID? I know it sounds stupid because other teams are heavily recruiting and that hasn't stopped other teams, but like, are there any obstacles that would explain why you're not seeing as much of it?
No, I'm not giving any excuses. If other universities can fly out here and hit the recruiting scene pretty hard, I'm not going to give any excuses to, you know, two schools that are in their backyard. So, nope, I'm not. I don't think that that's a good excuse at all.
All right. Well, just figured I'd ask.
I know you tried.
I really tried. I really tried to make excuses, and I'm still going to be delusional. By the way, I mentioned wanting a station dog, and someone texted in saying they have an adorable Mexican hairless dog that they would be happy to drop off for the day and then come get it later. What do you guys think?
Stacey, we're busy hosting a radio show for 4 hours.
It could hang
out.
You can't
just like drop your headphones and pet a dog.
No, I know, but it can hang out in the studio. I'll hold it in my lap.
I mean, it could bark. I don't think it's
going to
work.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that could go wrong, Stacey.
I think it adds character to the show. I don't know.
There's a lot of hardware in that room, a lot of expensive machinery in that room. I don't know if that's the best place to let a dog loose in.
The Seahawks set the blueprint for the Rams to beat the Cardinals, but can the Seahawks actually repeat it when the next season gets underway? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Huge breaking news ahead of a huge offseason for the Seattle Seahawks. News from the Seattle Times that the Seahawks will part ways with defensive coordinator Ken Norton Jr. They'll also reportedly part ways with defensive passing game coordinator Andre Curtis. Now, that news hasn't been announced or confirmed by the Seahawks. Bob Gondota of the Seattle Times, though, joined us at 10:30. If you missed that, you can hear it in hour one of the Jake and Stacey podcast. He joined us at 10:30 to say that, you know, he's expecting news or an announcement of this maybe in the next 48 hours, but that the team has typically been hesitant to announce these moves right away, maybe preferring to wait until the coach they're parting ways with gets another position or is linked up with someone else. So a delicate matter for Seattle, but the report from the Seattle Times that the team will move on from Ken Norton Jr. Now, we're going to get to this conversation because it's a huge offseason for Seattle. They've got major holes they need to fill. And now one of them is defensive coordinator. How do they move forward? What are the big pieces they've got to get? I mean, we're going to have an open conversation coming up in 15 minutes. And we're going to open up phone lines if you want to join the conversation with us to talk about either who you want to see at defensive coordinator, whether, you know, you just want to see, like, I don't know, maybe you just want to see Pete take over as defensive coordinator. Maybe you want to see someone else. Maybe you don't think it matters because you're too focused on whether or not Russell Wilson's going to be here. Maybe you're not focused on any of it and you're looking at something else. We're just going to have open lines. So if you want to call in, you can. That's going to happen in 15 minutes. We'll put you on. We'll give you a mic, and you can join that conversation we're going to have. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about this wild card game. Because during the Manning cast, Peyton, I'm on a first-name basis, Eli and Russ were all talking about how there's a little bit of a blueprint there that Seattle set. Jake, what did you see?
Well, I mean, what I saw, I think that when you're looking at the Seahawks, what they were able to do, I totally see that it was a blueprint for the Rams and the way that they approached it from a run game perspective and the approach that they had in going into that game against the Cardinals and saying, look, we're going to challenge you in the run game early. And if you can't respond to it, if you can't shut it down, then guess what? We are going to continue to attack it, and we're going to continue to keep running the football and try to complement it with, you know, our passing game. And so I do believe that they showed the blueprint for it. Now, with the Seahawks, can they overall repeat it? I mean, they have to be able to really, really, you know, progress forward personnel-wise from an offensive line perspective to say definitively, yes, this group can play that style of game week in and week out, no matter who they play. And that to me is something that you want to see and you're hoping to see from this group. And ultimately, that's why you brought Shane Waldron here, was to be able to unlock the perfect mesh point between having a really good running game and having a really dynamic, diverse passing game.
Can I just ask, by the way, that I'm curious, this question just coming to me now. For me, it's one thing to, like, watch a game. I'm not a huge X's and O's person and obviously have never played. It's one thing to watch a game and say that play looks familiar, that approach looks familiar, they clearly lead more into the run over the pass, etc. I can't quite as easily pick up on, like, oh, this team clearly watched this tape and then repeated some of those plays. Jake, you are able to do that. How often, when you look at these games, like how common is it that a team will literally kind of repeat some plays that worked against another team pretty regularly?
Yeah, it's something that I think that when you're talking about that side of it. Sorry, Stacey. I tried to move forward. You cut out there at the last second. Can you repeat that again?
Yeah. So if we're watching this game between the Rams and Cardinals, a lot of people were saying, including during the Manning cast, so this is coming from like Wilson, Peyton, Eli that are kind of looking at it, that it looked a lot like the Rams copied some of the blueprint that Seattle used. Now, there were some plays that Seattle didn't use in that game. It's not like they just went out with the same game plan, clearly, but that they copied a bit of the blueprint. How often does that happen where a team can look at a horrible loss that an opponent had and try to replicate
all the,
as much
all
of that?
The time? This is a copycat league.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the mantra. There's not a whole lot of innovation that goes on. You can look at certain places and different things, and maybe there's new waves that go on. But once that wave is introduced into the league, everyone tries to copy it in some form or fashion. And so there's no question that the Rams saw what the Seahawks did to the Cardinals and said, we are going to put our own version of this together in our game plan. And no doubt that they looked at Shane Waldron's offense and said, hey, this is our offense. This is what we do. Mm-hmm. So we can do this and execute this very perfectly. Yet there's still different passing plays, because, you know, the Seahawks don't have Cooper Kupp and what he does and what routes he runs, you know, particularly well. OBJ is different from DK. I mean,
yeah, we had that flea flicker play.
Right.
That Seattle obviously, you know, didn't.
Absolutely. So those are things that, you know, you put your own little wrinkle to the game plan, but it was the same thing. So ultimately, I think that when you're talking about the Cardinals, I don't necessarily view this is how you beat them every single time.
Right.
But you definitely saw blood in the water, you know, as the way they finished that game with the Seahawks and the Rams were going to stick to that plan and feel it out. And if they were successful with it to begin with, they were going to stick with it throughout the entire game. And that's ultimately what you saw.
When have you seen Seattle do that really effectively? Kind of alter their approach just a little bit and then just dominate another team because they took advantage of those weaknesses?
The best version that I can give you is back in 2019, and pains me to say that you have to go that far to give a, you know, very dramatic viewpoint, but you know, the Seahawks were the number one rushing offense in the league at that point,
I know what
right?
You're talk about.
And they played Tampa Bay in 2019, and Russell Wilson, you know, I think he threw it for, you know, 35 times, nearly 40 times in that game, and threw for a ton of yards, and they really, really transitioned that particular offense for the matchup that they had against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And they played more to the strength of the matchup, which was their passing game. And, you know, Tyler and DK had an unbelievable game that particular week. And so that to me is a perfect example of a time where the Seahawks in particular really changed and morphed from week to week, where they were a heavy run offense, that was their staple, and yet became a dominant and effective passing offense that particular week, taking advantage of a weaker point of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Now, vice versa, I know that any team self-scouts and you try to figure out, like, how would I beat myself, this team, and how would I move forward? If you're Seattle, how do you not regularly look at your games against the Rams? And say, what are we doing in this one? How do you move forward? Because if you're another team or another opponent, that's some of the tape you're looking at.
Yeah,
how has
it
this
is.
Team always had the better of Seattle?
Well, the problem is that they've had the better matchups. I mean, always and forever, Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd, I mean, you name it, Michael Brockers, you know, at one point Chris Long. I mean, they just always have had a superior defensive front to what you've had from an offensive line perspective. And that's always made it tough to play the Rams for over, you know, a decade, basically.
But why have the 49ers been able to run all over them?
Well, because they've been very committed to it. They've been very unique and dynamic in that approach. And also, the San Francisco 49ers have invested more from an offensive line perspective. So, yeah, you could look at it and say, well, San Francisco has you know, a run first oriented mindset. So do the Seattle Seahawks, but personnel doesn't match up. San Francisco has better personnel, has generally had better personnel from a run game standpoint. And also I think that, you know, Kyle Shanahan has been, you know, wildly creative in the way that they've gone about it. So, that to me is the difference between the two. And that's why I think when you're Seattle, you need to, This is another opportunity that you have in front of you to be able to invest in an area that's so important, which is offensive line, that allows you to play any style of game that you want to going into any week and allow you to do it at a high level and, you know, allow you to attack the Rams, who have had your number, in a way that really hurts them and slows them down, which is, you know, running the football at them consistently and limiting that pass rush.
All right, guys, we never usually do this. Usually on Mondays and Fridays, particularly during the Seahawks season, we have open phone lines, and we'll do, it's usually a one, and we'll say, you know, like, hey, what do you want to see in this game, or who got your game ball, or very game or team specific things. So I never normally do this, but we're just going to leave phone lines open. Jake and I are going to have a conversation about how the Seahawks move forward this offseason, some big areas to address, and then in headline rewrites, we've got some crack and talk to get to, and a look around the rest of the league, but we're going to leave phone lines open. So if you want to call in and there's something you need to get off your chest, you are a Seattle sports fan and you're like, you know what, respect the Seahawks, but like, I need to talk about what the Mariners need to do the second this lockout ends. Or maybe you want to sound off and say, you know what, I actually don't think they should have parted ways with Ken Norton. Or maybe you do and you have someone in mind that they need to hire. Whatever you need to get off your chest, we're going to leave the phone lines open for you. You are going to get a mic. You can call in 206-421-3776. So Jake and I are going to move forward. We're going to have our conversation, but you are welcome to call in. Literally, we are leaving these open for the next like 20 minutes. 206-421-3776. Jake and Stacey coming your way next.